morning. How nice to be with you all today. To be honest about what is in my heart, I was just standing looking out the window and I saw an old friend walking in who's been practicing here for many years. And I thought about all the other people who are here who've been so devoted to this practice, and I just felt very humbled to be a part of this community and to be sitting in this seat. And I'll start with an apology, because apparently this is the day in Japan where we would be celebrating Buddha's birthday, and I'm not going to give you a birthday party. Sorry, there is going to be a birthday party, I believe, at about 11:45 with kids. So if you want to hang out with Susan and I think Brian and a bunch of people and do some ritual around the celebration of the birth of the Buddha, that's a good time to do it. I will say that, I'm very grateful that Buddha was born. We have a big celebration for Buddha in December called Rohatsu Sesshin, and that's quite a party. For those of you who've been here, who are laughing because we sit in silence for days at a time, which is wonderful. What a wonderful way to celebrate together. When it comes to birthdays, I always have this little reaction on birthdays. I'm like, shouldn't we be celebrating the person who gave birth? Because they did all the work. You know? You don't even have to make some courageous choice to be born. You know, it's someone does all the work and then you're there and you're like, oh crap, here we go. But someone has to make a choice to do that incredibly difficult, courageous and painful work. And in fact, Buddha's mother died in childbirth, Maya. So, as do still 1 in 10 pregnant women near where Buddha was born, in Afghanistan. So, I think the extent of my celebration of the Buddha's birth is that I would like to offer a bow to everyone who has ever given birth. And you may join me in bowing thus. So my talk today is about how it has to do with the way the art... Are there any seats in here? Left? I guess we have a couple seats left here if you want to send people in, just so you know. Come on in. Let's. We might as well get people in where we can. We may be out. We still have some more.
How about this one?
Yeah, sit on that seat. Okay. This is the proper attitude. And we may have, okay. If you have chiropractic problems from sitting there, don't sue me. So the talk is about the way, has to do with the way people practicing the arts can show us something about our Zen practice. And you could say a lot of things, and one of the things you could say is that Zen is an art of living. So we can see how people practice art. It shows us something about our art of living. And I could say that Zen is an art of improvising moment to moment with whatever's here and making the most beautiful, kind thing that we can. As Suzuki Roshi once said, Zen is making your best effort in every moment for the rest of your life. Okay, all of you who want to leave are welcome to go. But the thing is, our best effort is an effort of kindness. And so when we realize that we're not making our best effort, which is probably plenty of the time, then the reaction that we're encouraged to provide to that realization is kindness and not judgment. Whatever it is that emerges in consciousness in this moment, this is our opportunity to be kind to that, whatever it is. Whether it would conventionally be called an element of ourself or an element of another, which are nominal distinctions. They seem real, and that's about it. So our practice and our performance in this art form is kindness. And what is the difference between the practice and the performance? Frankly, I don't know. So I'm going to wade into some treacherous waters here. Because what I'm going to talk about is a performance in a movie. The movie is called Shine a Light. It's directed by Martin Scorsese. It's a concert movie. And the performance is a performance by a fellow named Buddy Guy with a band called the Rolling Stones. Now, I can guarantee you that Buddha never gave any Dharma talks about the Rolling Stones. And he probably wouldn't advise that we do. But here we are, in this day. So the reason I want to be careful is that, in case it's not painfully obvious, I do not hold up the Rolling Stones as ethical exemplars. Although when I was talking about this to my son, I said, you know, the art of Zen is essentially an ethical art. The ethic of kindness is the performance. And he said, well, I mean, the Rolling Stones have an ethos. That's ethical. he's very clever. This is not an ethos. I assume you're familiar with the ethos of this group of people. So, but these people are musical exemplars. The way they make music, whether you're a fan or not, I think can teach us something about how to approach the art of moment-to-moment kindness. And, you know, this reminds me, a couple weeks ago, Ted gave a beautiful talk about a family friend who taught him a lot when he was young, someone who had a deep connection with nature, who made a deep connection with people, and yet was an alcoholic and suffered a lot and caused a lot of damage and died very young. And so this talk was sort of about how sometimes you can learn something beautiful from someone really quite troubled. So we can learn from people, a variety of people. But what I want to make clear is this is not at all a suggestion that we can fall down on our responsibility to stand up in kindness in each moment. So this is absolutely not, you know, there are many people in this tradition who sat in this kind of seat where I'm sitting, Buddhist priests who have engaged in ethical things that were really harmful to people. Let's put it that way. And this is not something that is an organization that we want to support. We have ethical policies. We want to call people out. They do something harmful. We want to step up. If I do something harmful to you, tell me. And if you think I'm doing something harmful to this community, go to the board and tell them. So, yes, that's important to me. So it gets worse because the title of the song they're performing that I'm going to talk about is Champagne and Reefer. He knows. Champagne and Reefer. I absolutely do not recommend intoxicants. As a recovering addict and alcoholic, I can tell you, didn't work out for me. I'm not going to talk about the song. The song's by Muddy Waters. I'm going to talk about the performance by Buddy Guy. there is an old sutra, an old Pali Canon Sutra where the Buddha says, he says there's a couple kinds of things people are good at. Some people are good at being insightful. Some people are good at being calm. So some people have vipassana and some people have shamatha. And he says, you know, if you've got a lot of vipassana, but you're not very calm, you should just go find someone who's really calm and you should ask them how they do it. And if you're really calm, but you're not very insightful, then you should see someone who's insightful and you should go ask them how they do it. So, to me, there's something simple in that about aspects of this practice, but there's also something about just realizing where there's things we can learn from people. People who are good at something. Going, oh, let me look at how you're doing that. And knowing where we have some room to grow. So that's sort of an argument for why it's interesting to look at how Buddy Guy approaches this performance. So because Zen is an art of living, we the split that you see in a lot of musicians, right? If we take, for example, the Rolling Stones. I don't know that much about Buddy Guy's personal life, which is fine. The split we see, it doesn't work in our art form because our art form, as I said, is ethical. The performance is compassion. So that's the music that we make in this moment. Is a music of compassion. Like either the activity of mind as we're doing zazen, of just being with what's here, which is already compassionate. You think you might have to make something extra to be compassionate? Just being here completely is already compassionate. Or if it's an act of speech, or an act of generosity, an act of going to the polls and voting and saying, I don't want the people in office who are going to kill more people. Sadly, we don't have the option to go and vote for people who won't kill any people. But we can at least vote for people who will kill less people. Buddy Guy is a blues musician. He's got to be about 75 years old. I guess you'd call him seminal, one of the early Chicago blues musicians. So blues originated in the South. A lot of people moved up to Chicago to get better jobs, black people, and brought music with them. And the music changed, became Chicago blues. And Chicago blues just completely transformed Western music. The impact of this small group of artists on the music that we hear now is really amazing. And so this guy made up music that was imitated by all kinds of people in the 60s, like Jimi Hendrix and the Rolling Stones and Led Zeppelin, who all got extremely rich. Buddy Guy never got rich. Muddy Waters never got rich. Howlin' Wolf never got rich. White people got rich. Black people didn't get rich. But he did make amazing and beautiful music. And it touched people. It touched people. That's why they emulated him. And he was known for... He's known for being very technically accomplished guitarist. So he can play really fast. Which, I don't know, it's not really my bag. But he's known for being one of the first, you know, kind of Chicago blues guys who's like, wow, long, fast guitar solos. And, you know, I'll compare this, in terms of our practice, to, we got Norman Fisher coming here. Norman Fisher and Buddy Guy are very similar. I know you guys all know that already. Norman Fisher is coming in June, and he's a wonderful teacher from San Francisco, and he's going to do a workshop here and a bunch of other stuff. He's very knowledgeable. He knows a lot about Buddhism. And so he is technically accomplished. You know, he has the technical language of Buddhism well established in his consciousness, but that's not why we're all going to come see him. People know that Norman Fisher embodies this ethic of kindness. So when he speaks, you can tell he's just trying to encourage you to step into this moment-to-moment opportunity for kindness. And he has a reputation for being really kind to people. So this is what really matters, and it's true with Buddy Guy. I mean, he can play a lot of notes, but finally the reason people wanted to emulate what he was doing was that he touched their hearts with his music. They listened to his music, and it touched their hearts. Rosemary, how many people, a lot of people here are going to be sewing with Rosemary pretty soon, sewing rock suits. It's fun, except for when it's not fun. Anyway, a beautiful practice, sewing, and Rosemary and Tomoy will be helping people doing that, probably a couple other people helping. But, you know, Rosemary can sew very rapidly. She sews these beautiful, you know, like I get done with my row of stitching and it's like broken teeth. She gets done with hers and it looks like a zipper. You know, so she has really great technique as a sewing person. But that's not why everyone's going to go sew rock suits with her. It's because she's embodying some stillness of this tradition. Now, the technique can't be separated, right? It's part of the process of finding the stillness. But it's not really what matters. And you know, Tomoy, who is Tomoy Katagiri, is the, you know, our sewing master around here, and she's really wonderful. And she's getting old. She can't see very well. She can't sew fast anymore. She doesn't sew straight stitches. But I'm going to get to go sew with Tomoy in a couple months, and I'm like, oh. I get to practice with Tomoy Katagiri because practicing sewing with her touches my heart, because she's still, because she's available. So in this movie, Rolling Stones play some songs, and then they say, Buddy Guy! And the crowd goes bananas. Yay. And Buddy Guy comes out and he has this big, just radiant smile. And it's a very beautiful moment. And they start this blues. And he just starts playing. Da-na, da-na, da-na. And he doesn't stop playing those two notes for a long, long time. And I thought Buddy Guy was the guy who played really fast. And that's it. Just two notes. The same two notes over and over again. We play the same two notes here. Actually, we're like a one-note wonder. We just play da, zazen, 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 zazen. If you come and hear these Dharma talks, we're gonna talk about zazen. Wow, one-note wonder. I should have given this talk about Joe Beam's one-note samba. Oh, well, that's next week, or in a few months, or whatever. So, repetition. The spirit of repetition. You know, sometimes, is there anyone here who's never thought, am I really going to sit down and do this again? Am I really doing this? Is it the fifth day of Sesshin and it's still the same wall? What is this? What are we doing? Repetition. We don't always want it. So we're looking a lot of times for something else. For something else. Zazen is a practice. The essential practice of Zazen is not something else practice. It's the practice of not something else. So we think, I want something else. I want a different back that doesn't hurt. Or I want a different mind that doesn't make all these thoughts. I know I'm alone in ever having thought that. Or I want a different practice, maybe one that involves some complex visualizations. Well, I should not scoff, because there are many wonderful meditations that do involve complex visualizations, but we just don't do it much here. We just sit with not something else, with whatever this is. And Buddy Guy just sitting, he's like, this is enough. Da-da, isn't this enough? He doesn't look like, I'm waiting to play the really cool notes. No one in that room is like, I'm waiting for him to do the really cool thing. They're just, the joy of just those two notes is there. Because he's absorbed, completely committed to playing those two notes. I teach music lessons. And, you know, people, they'll play a song once and they'll be like, okay, I got it. I'm like, oh, this is not going to work. This isn't going to work. What makes Buddy Guy amazing, what makes great musicians amazing, is even when they're playing the same thing they've been playing for 50 years, they step into the note they're on with their whole heart. That's Zen practice. Step into this note, this moment. Don't wait for another moment. Don't try and make another moment. Bring your whole heart to this one. The crazy thing about this is that when you do this unbelievably repetitive practice of just sitting down, sit down every day, it's all fresh. Freshness. I mean, it's never true that any two moments of Zazen are the same. It's never true that any two moments of anything are the same. But really, for most of us, the only chance to see the complete, unbelievable, always blossoming freshness of life is to give the mind a little chance to sit down in Zazen and begin to taste it. So it's also cool that old Buddy just plays these two notes. Because, you know, sometimes we might know a lot of things or have a lot of ideas. Or maybe we know exactly what someone else needs to do. And he shows us, like, I'm just going to say this simple thing. I'm going to say this simple thing that everybody knows. I've taught Dana to like every guitar student I've ever had. In fact, it was too simple to teach him, so I had to teach him Spoonful, which does the notes twice. Because they'd be too bored. They'd be too bored to do it as simply as Buddy Guy does. Who could play that when he was 5 years old? Who could play circles around it? But he knows, I can just say this simple thing. Dana. And that's enough. And there's something about confidence. There's something about faith. There's something about trust. Now, we might think those are really different things. But what I'm talking about is the feeling of not... It's non-fear. Non-fear. If I was going to play with the Rolling Stones, would I have the confidence to just play two notes? I'd be like, I better play something really good. Right? I'm scared. I got to do something. I got to get out there and do something and make something and get something done. How can I be sitting here in Zazen? There's important work to be done, people. Get on up and get after it. It takes some non-fear to just sit down and not do anything. This anxiety that underlies our lives pushes us into action all the time. then action is good. But stillness is good. Stillness is an important activity. Gute was a Chinese Zen teacher a long time ago who was famous for whenever anyone asked a question, he just held up one finger and didn't say anything. It is hard to imagine taking Gute to be your teacher. I know. However, he's saying something similar to it's like, can you see it's already here? What you're looking for is not something else. It's also true that the idea that he held up the same finger or it was the same activity is completely illusory. If you come in and say, Gute, my heart is breaking, and he just looks at you and does this, and you trust Gute because he's your teacher, you can see that he's pointing to your own heart, to just being here right now with him. And if you ask him some complex philosophical question, and he holds this up, God knows, you'll make something fancy up about what he means. But it's all your projection. It's always different. There is no one finger. Young improvisers always want a new scale. I think I got this scale figured out. Can you teach me some new scales? Just try this one. Just enter it. Just enter this. So, blues is generally constructed out of a... Well, this is not quite true. Chicago blues and a lot of subsequent blues is generally constructed around a series of chords that goes through 12 measures and repeats. 12, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. And it's like a set structure, and most American musicians have it down in their bones so deeply that it just happens. It's like sentence structure. But, you know, early blues was much less organized, and they'd have 11 bars or 13 and a half or 11 and a half, or like John Lee Hooker just plays till he feels like changing chords, and the band has to be like, and you have to pay really close attention to be in John Lee Hooker's band. And I'm watching this thing, and it's the Rolling Stones. They've got, I don't know how many guys are in the band, 6 guys in the band. They got Buddy Waters up there, or Buddy Guy up there. And then they got, like, organ players and a bunch of other people. They're like 12 people on stage. And I'm watching this. They're playing a 12-bar blues. I'm like, I know how this works. Yeah, sure. And suddenly there's this moment where I'm like, wait, what just happened? And you can see everyone is on the stage is like looking around. What just happened? They dropped a bar. They all dropped it at exactly the same time. They're all really, really listening to each other. So that when a subtle change happens, no one even knew who dropped it. They all just picked it up. And you can see it, everyone's got this little smile like, what was that? What was that? We don't know. We're here. We've been doing this for a long time. And something crazy and magical happened. If you're not listening, that doesn't happen. Suddenly everyone looks up 6 bars later and like, why are we all in the wrong place? Deep listening. Deep awareness. This is what Buddy Guy and his friends showed in that performance. This movie was shot by Scorsese, and the approach he uses is he just got lots of cameras, and he just set them loose on the stage. And then afterwards, they just took all the video and they edited it together to make a cohesive thing. Which, you know, some concert movies, you'd set up shots. You'd be like, okay, now we're going to have Mick Jagger's going to come out to the front of the stage and mug into the camera, you know, and so forth. And he just didn't use that approach. So it feels a little more improvisational in general. There's a moment where, quite a ways into the song, where I think maybe someone else is playing guitar solo or something. And Buddy Guy is, he seems to be just listening and playing. And he turns away from the audience and he looks stage left. And he looks right into a camera. So the effect, I saw this in a movie theater, is of Buddy Guy's face, which is about 20 feet tall, looking directly at me. But the strange thing is, his look seems completely penetrating to be looking at me, but completely vacant, as if there's no vision happening, because he's completely absorbed in listening to the music. And there's a look on his face in that moment that is really hard for me to describe. There's a tradition in Indian thought called darshan, where you just see your teacher and you realize a profound connection. And you know, sometimes when we go for doksan with our teacher up there, and you just look and talk to the teacher, or you talk to another person, any person, but it's more likely if you're really focusing on this kind of concentration that just looking at each other is like complete. The whole world is there just in that moment of looking. And I have to admit, my experience of looking at this image of Buddy Guy looking at this camera or just looking out was one of profound connection. Something in his face just seemed completely available to what was happening. His face, I would say, looked anguished. Anguished. Absorbed, but anguished. And in that moment, I felt a sense of all the pain. The pain that I bring to this life, of my past. I felt a connection to the pain that I'm sure Buddy Guy has experienced plenty of. And to all the pain that brings people to this place. Most of the people who come to this place are here because of some deep pain. And this is why the Buddha essentially founded Buddhism. The pain of human life was too great for him to deal with, and so he made a commitment to find a path to peace. So in this moment of seeing, of just seeing this face, there was all the pain right there. His pain, my pain, our pain. The pain we don't talk about. That we all carry with us in here, that remains unsaid. The pain of the fact that he had invented this music and watched other people carry it forth and get rich off of it. The pain of the fact that this music would never have existed without the importation of millions of people as slaves to the United States. An unbelievable, unbelievable level of cruelty and oppression without which it couldn't have happened. We can't be here without that. The wealth of this country was built on oppression. And it's here. I'm not saying like I was thinking about it watching this movie or that Buddy Guy was thinking about it. I'm saying it's here. It's always here. And in this anguished look on his face, the sense that I had was just of being there with it. Being there with all the suffering that comes with human life. Being available to it. Listening to it. Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, essential activity, is hearing the cries of the world. Realization, enlightenment, not escape from suffering. Complete, moment-to-moment engagement with what is, which includes suffering and everything else. Emptiness is form, and form is emptiness. And in this performance, you know, blues as a genre, and really most art to some degree, is about communally acknowledging how painful it can be to be a human being. To not being alone with it. Carry this around like we're alone. And just say, oh, we're all in the same boat. Kind of sucks sometimes. Sometimes it's horrible. And the amazing thing is that after this moment, which lasts like 3 seconds, 5 seconds, I don't know, where he's looking into the camera, he turns around and shines a light, a radiant smile so big it could illuminate New York City. And he says, joy pouring forth. He turns around and there's 3,000 people on their feet, enraptured, loving the experience of hearing this sound, being together, being absorbed in the activity of the moment. This kind of joy that is part of Zen practice, it's not separate from the anguish. It's not somewhere else. It's not something else. This may be, you might go, oh yeah, of course. Or you might be going, what the heck is he talking about? I don't know. But if you sit down in Zazen, if you just put yourself in the seat again and again, you taste this truth. That the joy of life bubbling up in each moment is not separate from whatever you are. From whatever you are in any moment. From whatever things are. I think it would be fun to just put like a laugh meter on Tim Burkett, our guiding teacher. His laugh meter would be, it'd just be clicking away. There's a joy that bubbles up out of this practice. So when we stop running away, when we see that the activity of mind, we begin to see that the activity of mind that's trying to manipulate things or push things away or hide things or control things or figure things out to try and avoid the pain of life, when we just see that in Zazen, something beautiful and naturally joyous and kind emerges. So this talk is not about Buddy Guy. This is a talk about you guys. This is about me guy. This is about us guys. This isn't about playing guitar. It's not about two notes. It's about this note. John Cage's note. The note he asked us to listen to when he made a composition of music where nothing is played. This is about our life. Listen. Be aware. Be responsive. Be ready when that drop bar comes. You and your friends can look around and go, what just happened? What just happened? Did we do that? Did we do that? When I bow in for sewing with Tomoe Katagiri, you know, I sewed with Tomoe for a long time because we sew a robe, and you bow at the beginning and the end. And I would go into her little room, And we stand in a semicircle and we all bow. And I thought for a long time, well, yeah, Tomoe bows and then we bow. And then at some point I realized, is she waiting for me to bow or am I waiting for her to bow? I have no idea. Two notes. You don't need more than two notes. How about compassion and awareness? Da-da! Just compassion and awareness. Yeah! This is our performance. This is your life. Your life is an opportunity to practice. Or perform. Perform love. That sounds like a good song to sing for the rest of your life, moment to moment. Meeting everything with an open heart. You don't have to run away from the pain of life. It's natural to want to. We should be kind to ourselves that we do, because we'll do it again and again. But we don't have to. We have this tradition to give us some confidence and some trust that we can sit down with who we are day to day, see it, not something else. Be available to whatever it is. Thank you. So, this is the time of day where people can make comments or ask questions or sing songs.
What was the title of the movie again?
Shine a Light.
Shine a Light.
Yeah.
Shine a light on
me. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, if you're not a Rolling Stones fan, I don't know.
What year was that?
Oh, it's made about 8 years ago. You guys are just shining your lights. Well, perhaps we can just move on. Let's, if you would like to speak, speak now. Oh, go ahead.
So I'm reminded of the sound of the meditation bell and singing bowls, which is like a video phone, which is a single tone. But it's one tone, but it's not really one tone because there's these complex intonations. I'm not a music person, so I have no appreciation for it. But, so yeah, I think it's interesting that the guitar notes and the meditation bell. Meditation bell is maybe the love and guitar.
We have pretty much one note here.